Listening Library presents The Search for Belle Prater by Ruth White. Read for you by Allison Elliott. One. My cousin, Woodrow Prater, and I, Gypsy Arbutus Lee Master, were both seventh graders in Mr. Collins's homeroom. We were in the same building as the high school, and we changed classes like they did, but we would not be considered a part of the high school until eighth grade. That's how it was in Coal Station, Virginia, in the fall of 1954. Mr. Collins was a real good teacher. I'm sorry to say he was not very good-looking, and he certainly was not as funny as some teachers I'd had. Sometimes I didn't even think he was very smart. I mean, I wouldn't mention it to anybody, but once on the blackboard he misspelled the word committee. He left off the final E. Even so, everybody loved Mr. Collins. He was kind. For example, when Cassie Colborne joined our class in December, he went out of his way to put her at ease. Like Woodrow, Cassie was from the backwoods, and she was littler than the rest of us. You could tell she was nervous about coming to a new school. So, during homeroom, Mr. Collins let her sit in the back row, where she wouldn't be so public. Then he quietly introduced her to the class and asked her if she would like to tell us about herself. She shook her head no, because I think she was too scared to speak. "That's all right, Cassie," Mr. Collins said. "The rest of us know each other, but you don't know anybody yet, and I understand what it's like to be in a new place." Cassie just smiled. For our first class, English, we stayed in the same room with Mr. Collins. It was during that period that he gave us an assignment to write a page about our life. I thought this was peculiar, because we had done an oral exercise very much like this one the first week of school. Then it occurred to me that this was Mr. Collins's way of introducing Cassie and the class to each other. During recess, we socialized in our homeroom because it was raining buckets outside. A few of us moved near Cassie to make her feel included. "Cassie, I'll declare, with your curly red hair, you put me in mind of little orphan Annie," Woodrow said to her. "Did anybody ever tell you that?" I elbowed Woodrow in the ribs because I was quite sure Cassie did not want to look like little orphan Annie. In the funny paper, she didn't have any eyes. "Well, she does look like her," Woodrow said, scowling at me, and then he faced Cassie again. "Little orphan Annie's cute and tiny like you." Cassie blushed and smiled. After that, she was more relaxed. She even joked a bit with us. The next day, Mr. Collins asked for volunteers to read our autobiographies, as he called them, to the class. I believe he was hoping that Cassie would volunteer, and he was not disappointed. After five or six others read their papers aloud, Cassie raised her hand. "Good," Mr. Collins said to the class. "Cassie has agreed to share the story of her life with us this morning." Everybody turned around and looked at Cassie as she stood up. I don't know what we expected. Certainly nothing extraordinary, but we were wrong.
"My full name is Cassandra Carol Colborne," she read. "I was born 12 years ago and named after Grandma Cassandra on my mama's side. She was born with a caul, and so was I. My mama died when I was born, so Gram was the closest thing I had to a mother, and after she died, too, I had no one but Pap, who is a quiet, good man. He has huge hands and broad shoulders. He really loves me and shows it in many ways. Because of him and Gram, I never missed my mother as much as I might have. On our own, me and Pap lived up Colborne Holler, which was named after my ancestors, and was once crawling with them, but now my kin are scattered all over these hills, and I was the last true Colborne living in Colborne Holler. A month ago, our old pickup truck finally died on us. That's when me and Pap decided to move to Coal Station so that Pap could be close enough to walk to the bus station where he is a driver. We moved into a house across the river by the railroad tracks. From our front porch, we can see the backs of the business buildings in Coal Station. Even though our house is small and on the wrong side of the tracks, I like it. In Colborne Holler, I attended John L. Lewis Elementary School. By the time I got to the seventh grade, I was a big fish in a little pond. But now, at Coal Station, I am a little fish in a big pond. Still, I know I am going to like it here. I have always liked school. I love reading history better than anything. That's because sometimes I get so caught up in it, I think I am there. And when I gaze upon certain pictures from the distant past, I have feelings of homesickness. Cassie finished abruptly and sat down. Immediately, Woodrow raised his hand and waved it around frantically. Yes, Woodrow, Mr. Collins said. What does it mean to be born with a call? Woodrow said.
Cassie,
Mr. Collins said, directing the question to her because he had no more idea than Woodrow did.
Don't y'all know about the Callborns? Cassie said.
We all shook our heads no.
Well?
Cassie hesitated. She had no script in front of her now, and she had to find the right words with all those eyes watching her.
Well, you see, the Callborns helped settle these mountains more than 100 years ago. They come over from the homeland of Ireland, where they were not treated good because they had the gift. Over there, folks made them out to be witches and devils.
What's the gift?
Flo Muncie asked.
The gift of knowing without hearing or seeing. It's the second sight.
Oh, I've heard of that, I blurted out. It's the sixth sense, knowing things without the use of the 5 known senses.
That's it,
Cassie said, and then smiled at me and went on with more confidence.
In Ireland, the Callborns had an ordinary name, McSomething, but when they came over here, they made up a whole new name, which to this day we're proud to own, and it tells the world what we are.
Exactly what are you? Woodrow said.
Cassie no longer hesitated.
One of us is born with a call every second generation. This time it's me. Next time it will be one of my grandchildren.
But what is a call?
Franklin Delano asked.
It's a thick veil that covers the baby's face when it's born. That's how everybody knows you have the gift. When you're born with a call, you know things all your life without being seen or told.
Woodrow and I exchanged significant glances. Yeah, Cassie Callborn was our kind of person.
If you was in a poker game,
Buzz Osborne said to Cassie,
could you tell when an ace was coming up?
No,
Cassie said.
It don't work that way. My gram always reminded me that I am not in charge of the gift. It's in charge of me, and I don't always know when it's going to open a door for me.
If the gift came from your mother's side of the family, how is it that you have the name of Callborn? Mr. Collins wanted to know.
Because whoever marries a Callborn woman has to agree to take her name so as to keep it and the legacy alive. That's how Pat became a Callborn when he married my mother.
So when you marry, Woodrow said, your husband will become Mr. Cassie Callborn? Everybody laughed, including Cassie.
No, just the last name, she said.
I must say, I find this fascinating, Mr. Collins said. And tell me, Cassie, why are you a year younger than your classmates?
Oh, that's because I could already read when I started school, so they moved me right on up a grade.
And who taught you to read, my dear?
Only Mr. Collins would ever say a thing like my dear.
Why, nobody taught me, Mr. Collins. I just knew. I reckon I always knew. The same as I know how to take fire out of a burn, and how to stop the flow of blood from a wound. It's just something I know.
The class was puzzled, but respectful, and Cassie was glowing. She had made a good impression her second day in a new school. After that, it was like she had always been with us.
2. A few weeks later, on New Year's Eve, we were celebrating Woodrow's 13th birthday next door at Granny and Grandpa Ball's house. Seated around the big wooden table with them were my mama, Love Ball Dotson, my stepfather, Porter Dotson, owner and editor of the local newspaper, the Mountain Echo, Porter's brother, Dr. Hubert Dotson, affectionately known as Doc Dot, his wife Irene, their twin girls, Dottie and Dee Dee, who were 4 years old, and of course, me and Woodrow. By this time, Woodrow had been living in Coal Station for 8 months. Before then, he had always lived up in an isolated holler called Crooked Ridge. He had moved in with Granny and Grandpa when his daddy started drinking too much, following the disappearance of his wife and Woodrow's mother, Belle Ball Prater. That event had been so mysterious and so traumatic to our family that she was never far from our thoughts. Any time you got Porter, Doc Dot, and Grandpa together, you could be sure there would be a little blackberry wine and a lot of very loud joking around because Grandpa and Granny were both hard of hearing. Doc Dot started the fun during dinner by shouting a story about one of his patients who came into his office with a banana in one ear, a cucumber in the other, and a carrot sticking up each nostril.
Doc, I don't feel so good, the man said. What's the matter with me?
And Doc said, it's obvious, my man. You don't eat right. When we had all finished laughing, Woodrow said,
sample complete. Ready to continue?